from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on June 8th when news broke that longtime chef, author, and television host Anthony Bourdain had died by suicide. He was an immense personality, challenging all of us to expand our ideas on food, to always be looking to try something new, to understand other cultures, to travel, and not in luxury either, to sleep on floors if we must, to find authentic community. This hour is the first in our series that we like to call the Summer of Food. Every Thursday at 1 p.m. for the next couple of months, we're going to cover the food scene in Western New York, and we're going to talk to chefs, farmers, enthusiasts. We're going to explore trends and culture. And we open the Summer of Food with a tip of the hat to Anthony Bourdain and a conversation about what is controversial in the world of food and maybe what should not be controversial but is. We hope it will be a fun and instructive conversation about food and dining with our guests for the hour. I don't know if he thinks of himself this way, but kind of the dean of the Rochester food scene is Mark Cupolo, who's chef and owner of Rocco. You think of yourself that way?
No, not really.
No. Nice to have you back here.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Throw your headphones on so you can hear our guest on the phone with us. Andrew Bush is on the line with us. And Andrew's got some Rochester connection. We know his mother well. He's the chef de cuisine at Bobby V's in Stamford, Connecticut. But we're claiming you for Rochester. Andrew, how are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for taking the time. And with us in studio, Zaki Johnson, Chef Zach, as he's known, the chef and owner of Zach's Gourmet. Open for how long now, Zach? Why don't you grab that mic and tell us how long Zach's Gourmet has been open?
We've been open for 2 years now.
Here in Rochester.
Yes, sir.
How's it going?
It's been very blessed, to say the least. To be open for more than a year, being a restaurant owner, is already a blessing. So going on our second year, it's been very good.
Absolutely. Sometimes you think if you just clear that 1 year mark, maybe you can actually hang around here.
It's the highest hurdle to jump over, you know?
Well, congratulations on that. And if you haven't been out to Zach's Gourmet, we actually crowdsourced a little bit asking for folks, who do you think are the best local chefs in town? And Zach's, a lot of people on our Twitter feed were mentioning Zach's. Read the Democrat and Chronicle Review, which gave a lot of praise to the very creative takes you have on burgers and other things there on the menu there, which was great. A lot of people mentioning Rocco. Kelby on Twitter said, Rocco is the only restaurant in Rochester that could legitimately go toe-to-toe in a major metro market in fine dining. Its greatness and consistency are not the result of context. So I could read a bunch of those. That's nice to hear, isn't it, Mark?
Sure, sure. Not sure what it means exactly.
Man, you guys are tough.
Context. What was that? No.
I think what he's saying is you can pick up Rocco and drop it into any major, you know, top five market, and it would succeed, not just for Rochester or not just for... You know, when people say, well, fine dining in Rochester, it's okay for fine dining in Rochester. No, he's saying, no, Rocco is great wherever you put it.
Nice. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I guess I feel that way a little bit.
Well, let me ask all three of our guests, and Mark, I'll start here with you. You know, Anthony Bourdain passed away about a month ago, and that came as a shock to a lot of people. He was famously cantankerous, but he just thought bluntness mattered. He was not afraid to tangle with people over ideas about food. He evolved in some ways, but we'll get into that. I wonder if it is passing. Do you think that bluntness is important, or are you in the category that says the diner is always right, the customer is always right, you got to sort of placate people? How do you feel about that?
Well, I definitely don't believe the customer is always right. That's that is just an impossible thing to say, you know. As far as Tony goes, you know his bluntness and all of that aside, all I can say about it is I've been listening to that guy since the time he came on the scene, and I've never stopped. So it was a big loss for me. You know, just I felt like I knew him. I felt like I've been living with him for the past 10, 15 years.
What do you think his legacy is in American food?
Well, I guess for me, you know, I think his first point was that he was really just reaching out to the cooks of the world, the people that are in these kitchens day after day, night after night, sweating it out under the fluorescent lighting. And he made you feel good about that was okay, and that was really what I took from it in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Of course, he went on to do so many different things in terms of travel and culture and all of that. But that first book really just told the life of a professional cook.
Chef Zach, you know, this idea of getting past the year mark, you're now at year two.
Yes,
I understand the idea that the customer is always right, because you don't want someone walking out the door saying,
Right.
I'm thinking of the pizza stop here in Rochester, my favorite place for pizza. And Jim Staffieri has a sign that says, you know, this isn't Burger King or McDonald's, and you don't get it your way. You get it my way, or you don't get the damn thing. And, you know, when you've been in business for a while, you can say that. But how mm-hmm. do you feel as a new business owner, relatively new, mm-hmm. about the idea that the customer has to always be right?
I think there's definitely a balance between the customer being right and just, you know, realistically, you know, you putting your foot down with your principles as far as how you run your business. If there's ever a complaint on my end, as far as like something that I produce, I've always tried to give the benefit of the doubt, even in the back of my mind where I feel like I know I crossed my T's and I dotted my I's. I think it's a balance as far as the customer being right, and then just like, you know, you have some ridiculous request, you know, some ridiculous complaint. So I think you just have to be a good judge of character and have empathy as a business owner, you know, as well as integrity, because that's the balance that you kind of have to uphold, you know, integrity in your product, but also having empathy and saying, if I was a diner, how would I want to be treated as well?
Sure. So that maybe there's a difference in between a diner who has a complaint and a diner who is belligerent.
Correct. Correct. And I mean, in the business, you'll see the, you know, both scales. You'll see the really, really belligerent person. You'll see the person who has a very valid point. And
sure.
It only takes you putting your pride aside for a second to, you know, rectify the situation and leave everyone happy. So
that's
what I try to do.
Andrew Bush, how do you make this conversation when it comes to the customer's always right and dealing with those kind of complaints?
I feel that the customer is right at a certain point. If, you know, we mess up, then on our end, yes, we should fix it. But at the same time, it's like you guys are also coming to us to try something different, try something new, to get out your surroundings, your area, your expertise. And it's not always be perfect, but we're here to make it perfect. You know what I mean? That's the biggest thing that we look forward to as chefs, that, you know, this is our craft, try and give you guys everything we can do, our heart, our soul on a plate. Every plate is literally piece of our heart, you know.
Well, let's talk about some of the controversial ideas, not just that Bourdain has, but we'll ask all three of our guests, you know, what they would like to do more of if they could. And to some degree, they can. I mean, they're running the operations or they're helping planning the menus. But there's always that push-pull between, if I put something on the menu and nobody orders it, what's the point? So we'll get to that in a second. I will start with the most controversial quote that Bourdain's known for, which is on vegetarians and vegans. I will read this in full, and I think Mark is going to let us know after I read this. I think Bourdain might have softened a little on vegetarians and vegans, but here's what he is most famously quoted on when it comes to vegetarians and vegans. Anthony Bourdain said, quote, "Vegetarians and their Hezbollah-like splinter faction, the vegans, are a persistent irritant to any chef worth a damn. To me, life without veal stock, pork fat, sausage, organ meat, demi-glace, or even stinky cheese is a life not worth living. Vegetarians are the enemy of everything good and decent in the human spirit, an affront to all I stand for, the pure enjoyment of food. The body, these waterheads imagine, is a temple that should not be polluted by animal protein. It's healthier, they insist, though every vegetarian waiter I've ever worked with is brought down by even the rumor of a cold. Oh, I'll accommodate them. I'll rummage around for something to feed them, for a vegetarian plate, so to speak, if I'm called on to do so. $14 for a few slices of grilled eggplant and zucchini suits my food cost just fine." End quote. That's harsh. All right, but Mark, you said toward the end, did he soften a little on that, Anthony Bourdain?
I think he did. I'm sure he possibly did. He, you know, I think he's just speaking to, he seems to be speaking to an old school thing that he grew up with. You know, he grew up in European kitchens, and back then, I don't really think there was a vegetarian movement.
Exactly.
You know?
But that's kind of harsh in modern understanding.
Well, he's a comedian, too, you know?
That's true.
I laugh more at that than I think about it really means.
Sure, you laugh more than take it seriously.
Yeah, right. Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think, you know, if Bourdain were sitting here today, and we all wish he were, I think he would probably say, look, yes, I made it to make you laugh. I don't think vegetarians and vegans are part of Hezbollah, and I wanted to at least make you think about how extreme they could be in their positions.
Right.
But do you feel negativity toward your customers who are vegetarian or vegan?
No, not at all. Nope. I mean, I don't, you know, we We have a lot of vegetarian options on our menu. We have a lot of menu items that can be made vegetarian, made vegan, and my team in the kitchen, they know exactly how to transform those items. And you just have to be, if you're coming into a restaurant that is not specifically vegetarian or vegan, you have to navigate your way through the menu. You know, you have to know something about food and you should be able to, you shouldn't ask somebody to create something for you. You should be able to pick it out of the menu with the assistance of your server and make yourself a nice meal.
Okay, so that, does it annoy you then if a customer comes into Rocco and says, make me something vegan or vegetarian, instead of looking at the menu and trying to figure out what their options might be first?
It doesn't irritate me because I won't do it. It just, just as I just said, I could, if it were me, I could go out to that table and put together a beautiful meal for that person.
Sure, but have you had customers get upset with you?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
You know?
Oh, good. See, Bourdain was maybe caricaturing.
Yeah, I mean, if you want vegetarian cuisine, you should go to a vegetarian restaurant. If you want to eat vegetarian in any other restaurants, you should ask the help of your server, and they will point out to the items on the menu that fit your needs. And, if you don't like those particular items, then maybe you're out of luck.
Okay.
You know?
All right. So, incidentally, vegetarians and vegan listeners, I'm on your side on this one here. let me go ahead and read from the Democrat and Chronicle Review of Zox,
okay,
because there's a vegetarian option there. And Adam Wilcox wrote, quote, "For vegetarians, Zox serves veggie burgers that he gets from Rochester's Headwater Food Hub. My wife, Anne, designated veggie burger aficionado for Cheap Eats, gives it the thumbs up." And that, in many ways, Adam is kind of pointing out here, it mattered for his wife that you had this on the menu, and it made the dining experience pretty easy. But do you have any affinity for what Bourdain said about vegans or vegetarians, or do you think that was a little harsh?
I think Bourdain himself is, of course, he's blunt, he's honest, and I kind of think that just goes along with food. Food is very blunt, it's very honest. It's either it's good or it's not good. It's one of the reasons why a lot of chefs get into the profession, because we're not in the business of pouring something on something and calling it a pancake, but we're very honest in what we do. Like he said, we put our heart in every plate, so it's either going to be a reflection of hard work and effort or something that's very on the opposite end. With my restaurant or whatever like that, when it comes to vegans and vegetarians, I just would like the public to know that, we are very much geared towards meat eaters. When I originally opened up my restaurant, the official name was Zox Gourmet Burgers and Shakes. And but I do know that, being vegetarian and being vegan, it's trendy right now. So you're going to have a lot of people who want an alternative. We also do turkey burgers, which is an alternative to red meat. So you kind of have to know your audience. I didn't want to overcome my menu with vegetarian options because that wasn't the essence of what I was trying to put out. But I do know that there's people that come in from time to time and they want something as an alternative. And I think as a business person, you would be very hard pressed or shooting yourself in the foot not to listen to those concerns, or there's opportunity in those concerns.
Sure. So. Andrew Bush, vegetarians and vegans walking into Bobby V's. How often do you hear that from customers, and how much do you seek to make sure they know that they've got a place at the table there?
It's actually ironic versus everybody else that here we actually go to tables and ask what they want to eat for vegans and vegetarians. We get them pretty frequently, almost every single day, even though we're not geared towards vegetarian vegans. But I mean, it's the way of life. Everybody wants to become a vegan or vegetarian for health reasons, to better themselves. It's going to be with us for years and years and years. So, I mean, every day we'll get them, we'll make them something special. We'll, go out the way, have a little extra, some vegan bread here or there, or some vegan wraps, but that's just the life we live here.
Do you think Bourdain was, again, I know it was for sort of for comedic value, but when he kind of maligns vegetarians and vegans. What he's really saying is they are demanding and that they have unrealistic expectations for dining and that they treat people poorly when their expectations are not met. And again, that's what I think was unfair. I wonder how you feel about that, Andrew.
I think at the time for Tony versus the time now, when there wasn't as much vegan vegetarians then versus now, I think there was a middle line between vegan vegetarians really expecting the chefs and restaurants to be, this is what I want, I don't care, this is how I want it, versus being now is they have their more understanding, you know, if they don't got it, we'll have this, or that there's more restaurants, you know, like Doc said, that there are, either you can go to there or you can go somewhere else. But nowadays, in 2018, there's much finer line between restaurants and vegans, vegetarians.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the subject of trying new foods, here's what Bourdain said, and we're going to ask our guests now, you know, what you would add to your menu if you knew it would sell, because diners might say they want to try new foods, but I'm not sure when people go to Rocco or when they go to Zox or when they go to Bobby V's or when they go to Lento, wherever they go out, that they want to try something new every time. I mean, everybody who goes to Rocco gets the butterscotch Bedino, and Mark cannot get that thing off his menu. He just cannot, I don't think. Is it still on the menu, right?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, so it's a law that it has to stay on the menu. Your diners would walk out. Right. Here's what Anthony Bourdain said on trying new foods. He said, quote, "Do we really want to travel in hermetically sealed Popemobiles through the rural provinces of France, Mexico, and the Far East, eating only in Hard Rock cafes and McDonald's? Or do we want to eat without fear, tearing into the local stew, the humble taqueria's mystery meat, the sincerely offered gift of a lightly grilled fish head? I know what I want. I want it all. I want to try everything once." End quote. Andrew, do customers want to try new foods when they come to you, or especially your repeat customers, do they tend to order the same thing over and over?
The regulars here would definitely tend to order the same thing over and over again. I've offered them different ideas, different, you know, plates. And once you're comfortable, you're there. But when we do change the menu up a couple times a year, we get good responses. You know, people try it, it becomes popular again, and they forget about the old. You know, they're big on change here, which I'm actually happy about. You know, coming from Rochester, it's not so much, but down here in Stanford, they love change. Every single day, every single season, they want something different, new flavors for the menu.
That's great. I mean, it sounds like, you know, I think a lot of chefs would love to have a dining clientele that wants to explore a lot. And so, Zaka, you know, for you, you've got a menu that's going to stay pretty consistent, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But how much would you like to play with it if you could?
I think every chef kind of has a connection to being an artist. As well as, you know, being a cook or a chef. And when we do plates or whatever like that, I think all of that comes into consideration, the aesthetics of it, the taste of it, things of that nature. So when I'm doing my menu, I kind of liken it to somebody who's very, very talented and can play almost every instrument, but literally the crowd wants you to play the top 40 hits every day.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And as a business person, you have to definitely keep that in consideration. But I think the very beauty of doing things like specials, you're able to create. You're able to allow yourself to express yourself on a plate in a different type of manner as opposed to the same song and dance that people are used to. In my business model, like I use social media a lot, because when I first, you know, opened up Zox, or the idea of Zox, I was working at, you know, I was working at the Woodcliff and I was doing brunch. So I was able to have access to a lot of different ingredients, a lot of different colors, and playing with that, you know, taking pictures and putting it on social media. A lot of people eat with their eyes first. So when you can, you know, play around with things and create new things like that, I find my customers will go on to my Facebook or my Instagram, see something that I posted, and it's almost like a thirst trap or a hunger trap in this regard, because they'll see it and be like, they won't even know what it is. They'll just show me their phone. Like, I want this right here. And I'm like, okay,
that.
Cool.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's the one good thing about the technology today, is that we can switch it up on that regard.
Mark Cupolo was nodding when Zach brought up the specials, that being sort of the playground for a chef. So tell me about the menu at Rocco, how much it changes and how much your regular clientele will move around a little bit if you give them those chances.
Well, that's been one of the keys for us, is to do both. You know, our menu has pretty much stayed the same since we opened. We may change a salad and a meat dish quarterly, but the rest of it has stayed intact. And that's perfect, because probably a good number of people always do want the same thing when they come back. But we have 6 to 10 specials every day, and that gives us the freedom to change it up, work with the seasons, and everything else that you're supposed to do, you know, as a modern chef.
We've got a couple of great questions and comments via phone. So Richard in Canandaigua, Linda in Aurora, hang there for one more second. Just to follow that up, what's the wildest thing you've ever put on your menu, and did it sell? Mark. Say wild. I mean, you know, food doesn't not necessarily wild, but I think you know what I mean. The most probably unusual to your diner's expectations, and did it move?
Well, we haven't really done too much wild, but a couple weeks ago, I did. My friend Tony gave me 5 pounds of sweetbreads, and we featured those for a week, and it was a tough sell, but there were a few people that knew exactly what they were, and we're so happy to see them on a Rochester menu, and it was a, you know, a success. It wouldn't be something that I would ever put on a menu. It would sit there, and you would have to be constantly figuring out what to do to get rid of these sweetbreads.
Because most people will still hear sweetbreads, and they'll think, well, what's wrong with sweetbreads? Mm-hmm. I like bread.
Well, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You want to
tell
them? Yeah,
again, that's those things, I think they're kind of going out of fashion for the young people. Organ meats and that kind of thing. I think that's, you know, something from the past a little bit. Older people, if you have an older clientele, you can sell liver, you can sell sweetbreads. And we can. I just don't do it that often because it's a little bit of a challenge.
Interesting. Andrew, how do you feel about that?
I also feel the same way. I think the ways of the old is, you know, slowly becoming as it is old. But I feel that there's no reason not to keep, you know, trying different things, trying new foods. You know, I love sweetbreads all day, every day. So, you know, when restaurants that I used to have them don't have them anymore, you know, kind of sad. But, and I get it. You know, it's got to come over the time. It's modernized a little bit more, but it's unfortunate.
Okay. And Zach, anything you've put on the menu that, you know, any risks that you found yourself taking there? Or is it important early on to kind of stay within a little framework there?
Yeah, I think when anytime I do pasta, there's an insatiable appetite for pasta for whatever reason. People love, and that might work for you a lot, Rocco. But anytime I do a pasta dish, it does very well. It's not very, you know, traditional, what you'll get at a burger restaurant or anything like that. But aesthetics wise, you know, it looks good on, you know, social media, and people see, you know, the different sauces, and, you know, that stuff just kind of speaks to people's appetite, I believe. So,
well, you, once you build your clientele over the year, again, Zach's Gourmet, in Rochester, 975 Chilai Avenue in Rochester.
Yes, sir.
It's been open for a couple of years. As you continue to build that clientele, will you be able to experiment more, to play a little bit more?
Yeah. I think in the first couple years or whatever like that, and this is just year two for us, when I first opened, I found myself trying to appease too many people. So I had thousands of things on my menu. Some worked, some didn't, but it was more or less trying to hit all these different points of interest that I believe that were the area was calling for. But as you begin to get more and more grounded into what you're doing, you'll begin to notice what sells, what really doesn't sell. And I think with my particular business or whatever like that, I'm just trying to get it down to a science as far as what is going to stay on the menu and what isn't going to. And when we begin to open up other restaurants, hopefully in the future, then I'll begin to kind of tweak the menu out a little bit more. But, like, we're a very small operation. It's almost like a broom closet in there. So we're very limited by size.
Yeah,
you
sure.
Know what I mean?
Well, not for long if this continues. If you're just joining us, it's the Summer of Food on Connections, and we're talking about trends and what chefs and owners of restaurants are experiencing from the expectations of their clientele. And in the spirit of the late Anthony Bourdain, who died a month ago by suicide, we're asking about some of his most controversial opinions and what our guests think about that. It's time to get to your phone calls. If you're just joining us, you just heard Zach Johnson, Chef Zach of Zach's Gourmet in Rochester. Easy to find online, Zach. Where are you online?
We're on Grubhub. We're on Uber Eats, Facebook, Instagram, pretty much everything.
Zox is Z-O-C.
Apostrophe,
Zox.
Yes.
Yep, Zox Gourmet.
Yes, sir.
Don't say Rocco's. It's Rocco, though I'm sure you've heard Rocco's many times, Mark Cooper.
Sure, yep.
But
yep.
You'll, as long as they show up, you'll be fine.
Right.
Rocco, Monroe Avenue, you'll need a reservation. Mark Cupolo, chef and owner of Rocco, is with us. And on the phone with us, with a Rochester connection, it's Andrew Bush, who's the chef de cuisine at Bobby V's down in Stamford, Connecticut. So we're waiting for him to come back to Rochester, but for now, he's down in Stamford. So we've got a lot to talk about, and let's get to your phone calls. I'm going to start in Canandaigua. This is Richard. Go ahead, Richard.
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. There are two sins that all restaurants always commit. One has to do with portion size. Now, referring to Anthony Bourdain for a minute, for all of the food that he tasted, he'd take a taste here, he'd take a taste there, and he always remained trim and fit. But try to get a proper serving size in a restaurant here in this area. It's impossible. You're overloaded. And my wife and I, we refuse to take food home with us that we can't eat because we were served three times as much as we needed or that would have been tasty for us. Now, the second sin has to do with the Italian tradition of handling pasta. Now, despite the large immigrant influx in the late 1860s and the establishment of a vibrant Italian-American community in this area, the tradition of handling the pasta itself, not the sauces and all the rest, but the pasta itself, that tradition has failed totally. There is not a restaurant in Rochester that knows the first thing about how to prepare pasta like they do in Italy. And I've been to Italy many times, and my mouth waters every time I'm served pasta in Italy because it's the proper wheat from which the pasta is made is the correct one, and the cook's handling of it is just beautiful. So those are my points. And all talk about menu and fancy ingredients and so forth is moot if you don't deal with the serving size.
All right, so Richard, thank you. Yeah, good stuff. And so let me kick it to our chefs with this. I'm going to agree to a point with Richard. When I have a conversation with friends, say, you know, oh, we went out to eat at, I'm going to get sued, but I'm just going to say it, the Cheesecake Factory. They have a Skinny-licious menu at the Cheesecake Factory, and Skinny-licious calorie counts are like 500 to 1,000. And that's the skinny part of the menu. I mean, but usually what people will say is not the food was great. It's that, did you see those portion sizes? As if that is a virtue in and of itself. Cheesecake Factory, I know you're great, and please don't sue. You're good folks. But I will say that if somebody is making a great, thoughtful meal, I won't complain about the portion size because I'll get to take some home. What I want to know first and foremost is it thoughtful? Is it well prepared? And at that point, it's up to the chef to decide how much they want to give me for my money. But Andrew Bush, I'll start with you on that. What do you make of the question on portion sizes? Do your diners have an expectation that portions be a certain size? What do you think?
I think that they combine portion size as well as the price of the plate. You know, maybe it's a high price. Usually you want a decent sized portion. You know, if it's steak, you want like a 9-10 ounce steak. But at the same time, you want to make sure that they're full. You know, I mean, you want to make sure that they're fed right then and there. If they take some food home, great. You know, they're going to have some more later on. They're going to come back tomorrow maybe, get some more dessert or get something later on. But also, though, I don't want to give them a small portion because then they don't feel like they've had enough. You know what I mean? That's the biggest thing. It's not the person not having enough food.
Zach, your plates are pretty big. In fact, in the Adam Wilcox review in the Democrat and Chronicle, he thought, boy, half a burger or half a sub was enough.
Right.
You know, but how do you feel about portion sizes and expectations?
I think it depends on the dish itself. I think when you're dealing with And in the attitude of the diner, if you're coming to a restaurant with the mindset of like, hey, I really want something heavy that's going to sit on my stomach so I don't have to really eat for the next couple hours, I think it's important to, you know, serve something that's substantial. But when you're dealing with something that's like, let's say, a Kobe beef or something like that, like, you're not going to get 10 ounces of that. With us, we do a half-pound burger. It kind of cooks down to a little bit over a third, but we wanted to make sure that we're not giving you just like a thin quarter-pound something that you'll get from McDonald's or anything like that, because the price point that we set, we want to make sure that you're getting your money's worth. And just my particular business, and I just want to make sure that people are fed properly before they leave.
And they can take some with them if they want, right?
Yeah, usually, I mean, I've seen a couple feats where people just take it down right then and there, and I don't know where they put all that stuff, but like...
But I know the feeling, because I would be the kind of guy who would have one of your burgers, and I would say, you know what, I'm just going to do half, and then I'd be halfway through, and I'd think, I should not eat the whole thing, but I'm going to do it.
Yeah, yeah. I think you should go all in. I think, you know, when you're dealing with food, you want the best presentation right then and there. You don't really want to have to really heat it back up and... You're cheating yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if it's not fresh right there.
Right.
All right. Mark Cupolo from Rocco. How do you feel about portion sizes?
Well, I think if you're at the very high end of the price spectrum, which I've always been, I think it's important to not serve a portion that's too small. That really will reverberate through the community by word of mouth. I've always had portions that I felt were on the large side. I'm a big eater. I always eat everything on my plate. But that being said, I think, again, I'm going to keep referring to the old versus the new. You know, the old Rochester, you had to have a humongous portion. You had to be able to take some home with you in order to be happy, I think. You know, but that's changed over time, too, and the how you put your plate together too. Maybe the size of the protein has come down, but yeah. The rest of it, you know, I just think that it's just the way I feel about it. It's we give a big portion, I believe, and we charge a lot of money for it. And if they want to get two meals out of it, that's fine. I know my girl, she does that every time. She eats half of her meal and takes the other half home and eats it for lunch. Back to what this guy said about
that's
the
okay. Grab that mic, put it right in front of you. There you go.
The pasta comment on the phone caller there. I have to disagree with one of the things he said. And you can get a good dish of pasta in Rochester, New York. There's no question about it. That's a ridiculous statement. I think going the portion. I think pasta in Rochester is all backwards to begin with, and that goes back to the question we talked about earlier about what's Italian food. Well, if anybody's been to Italy, they know that that pasta is a middle course, antipasto, pasta, main course. The pasta portions in Rochester are all too big, because people in Rochester eat pasta as a main course. That's unheard of in Italy. So
I never knew that. That's some
yeah,
noodles
it's
right there.
Antipasto. They call the pasta course the primo. Mm-hmm. And then the secondo is the meat or fish, and that's usually a small and very simple portion for those who want some meat or fish.
Okay.
But the pasta is something that's probably what would be a half portion here. It's eaten before the main course. It's eaten very quickly, too. It's small portion. You eat it quick. You don't let it sit there and congeal while you talk and look at your phone and everything else. Right. You know, it's so pasta right. service in Rochester, I think, in general, is just not the right. It's not authentic, you right. know.
That's true. The part that's true.
That's okay. It baffles me a little bit. It doesn't baffle me. I know that's the way it is, but it's kind of hard to look at those giant bowls of pasta that we serve or other places serve because it's...
But wait, you're saying you serve giant bowls of pasta too?
We do because people want them as a main course.
Mm-hmm. So you're participating in the backwards culture.
Well, I'm not going to pretend. There's no way that you're going to change the culture here about right. eating pasta.
In one restaurant.
In general.
Yeah, this is a call to all Rochester restaurants, starting with Mark Cupolo on Connections. Smaller portions of pasta not the main course.
Right.
Okay.
Now
we're in.
That being said, too, I think in Italy, I think the antipasto, this is the way I understand it, that is in restaurants for people that have money, that go out, that have enough money to order antipasto, pasta, and secondo. Now, if you don't have enough money, you go to a restaurant that might be called an osteria or something like that. You may have your pasta and your main course, or you may just have your pasta, and that's it, you know, so.
That's interesting.
But in order to really have an authentic Italian meal, you have to have three courses, you know.
All right, so we got to do this. We got to get our only break. We're way late, and we should have done 2 hours for this because we're having so much fun with our guests here. And we hope that after the program today, you can go find them yourselves, whether you're here in Rochester. Rocco, you just heard Mark Cupolo, the chef and owner of Rocco, which has been there for 10-plus years now.
It'll be 10 in December.
Coming up on 10 years on Monroe Avenue, right down near the heart of the city. And Zach Johnson, the Chef Zach at Zach's Gourmet, that's Z-O-C-S, on Chilai Avenue in Rochester. Andrew Bush on the line with us, a Rochesterian at heart, but the chef de cuisine now down in Stamford, Connecticut, at Bobby V's if you're traveling. So let's get that only break of the hour, and we're going to come back. We got a ton of your phone calls and good stuff to work through. So let's take that break. And I'll tell you what's coming up on Friday on The Next Connections. John Landis, legendary director, is joining us. And we're having a conversation with John Landis. I have to do something tonight I've never done. I got to watch Animal House. I've never seen it. I know. So I got a lot of work to do. We're going to talk to John Landis on trends in the industry there, as well as some other guests tomorrow. So join us Friday for John Landis and more, and I'll give you my review of Animal House. That's tomorrow. Welcome back to Connections. I was apologizing to our guests about how hot it is in the studio, and they all said, we work in kitchens. It's been hot for about a week and borderline unbearable. So even our studio, not too bad. We've got a lot of your phone calls to get through. So if I come to you, let's keep it moving as fast as we can. Linda in Aurora first. Go ahead, Linda.
Hi there. You're making me hungry. Say, and I will be delighted. I'm an experienced eater. I'll eat your sweetbreads. But my question is, I have a lot of food allergies developed as a result of lots of antibiotic use, and I'm not vegan. I can eat just about any meat except for chicken, and I'm allergic to soy and cow's milk. How does anybody with allergies, without being Hezbollah, saying, you know, demanding, can I call the day before? I love to eat out. I love to cook. I love to eat.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if there's some, like, would it help if I, or, you know, just like, never mind, cook it yourself or go to a vegan restaurant? I tend to eat Middle Eastern because they use olive oil instead of butter and, you know, like that. But is there some way that I can savor your sweetbreads, for one thing, you know, whatever? Does it help to call the day before and
sure.
say what's the time when you're not going to be so busy? Is there some way that I can facilitate eating out?
Yeah, fair questions. Linda, thank you, and thanks for listening on Finger Lakes Public Radio, WEOS. Mark Cupolo, I'll start with you. What would you say to her?
I think she was hinting at saying something about calling ahead and kind of plotting her menu. I think that's a fantastic idea. Part of the reason for all of this stuff that we're talking about, catering to specific diets, catering to specific customers, it isn't that the chef doesn't want to do that. If you set foot in one of these restaurant kitchens, it's like a factory. It's not three or four guys, artists back there trying to create meals for everybody. It's a factory that is staffed usually by, it can be any type of person back there. They're not brain surgeons or chemists or, you know, they're there to do a job and work on this factory line. All of these special requests that come in the middle of service is like saying, like they say, throwing a wrench into the line, you know, or into the process. And it just makes it difficult for everybody to shift gears to create special meals. Mm-hmm. Again, chefs like to cook for people. They like to create new things. They love what they do. But that dinner service is not a creative period. That's a process by which we are feeding a large number of people in a very short time. So, you know, if you take a guy that's making salads that night, and let's say he just moved, you know, he's new to the area, may not speak English, he may not have an education. If you tell him to make tomato basil salad nine different ways in the middle of a Saturday night, he's going to have a meltdown. You know, right. He really is. And that's the point. It's not that we don't want to please people. People just don't understand what's going on back there.
I think Linda is having a very thoughtful moment where she's just trying to figure out, hey, I understand that I may make it more difficult, so what can I do? And calling ahead's great. Trying
Absolutely.
To figure that out's great.
Absolutely.
Andrew, anything else you want to add to that? Go ahead.
I believe, yeah, calling ahead is you know, awesome, 100%. And even if you came down, you know, called ahead a couple hours or came down, I mean, allergies are allergies. You can't control them. You know, I mean, it's something that you're gonna live with the rest of your life. This is that how it's gonna be, and we're always trying to make a way to, you know, accommodate you as best as we can, so that you can, you know, have the great food, but also, you know, don't get sick. Having worked in RIT, I've been around a lot of the kids who are gluten free. You know, I mean, and celiacs. You know, so I understand that it's tough. It's very, very tough to deal with that, something like that. So
yeah, thank you, yeah, Linda. Zach, you want to add anything there?
Yeah, I think she had the right mentality to call in before, because as he was speaking before, it's very much just like a routine when you're dealing with dinner service. It's you're not necessarily, well, for me, I'm on the line myself, but when I did have other line cooks, it's not about someone being the most skilled artist or whatever like that, because when you're pushing out a product, say this is, you know, I have the Cobb burger, which is the most popular burger on my menu. I just need someone to recreate that same taste of that burger. They don't have to go above what I'm doing or anything else extra special. So like,
but you need consistency.
Yeah. So like, to speak to what he was saying, it's very much like a factory. And when you have a special request like that, like the veggie burgers, of course, we're not going to cook those burgers on the griddle with the rest of the proteins or anything like that. So in that regard, we grab a saute pan and we'll do it completely separate from another person to not cross-contaminate or anything like that. Yeah. So those kind of things kind of throw off your times a little bit. And I think when you're working in a kitchen, time can go by so fast, because you're really just... When you get an order, say it's just like, for me, a steak and shrimp, I know what time it takes to make that particular order. I know it like the back of my head. So, like, I'm already, you know, pretty much portioning out a certain amount of time that I have when I'm giving a person a time where they can pick it up. Like, this order would be 20 minutes because I know it would only take me 5 minutes to create each item. But when you have something that kind of throws a wrench in the situation, that's when you begin to kind of unravel a little bit.
Yeah. Things and, break down.
Yeah, yep. And
no
you have
question.
To kind of bring it back.
Yep.
Because now you don't have that, you don't have that complete confidence in the time that it'll take, or the person back there.
Yep.
You might not feel like they're all the way adequate in doing so. So it's not, like you said, it's not like we don't want to accommodate the person. Being a chef, I think the greatest joy is to create something that someone can, you know, enjoy and say, wow, this was really good. It gives you a lot of gratification as a person who created it. So it's not like, it's not like we don't want to do it for them. It's just, it creates so much extra.
I'm with you. And Linda was listening in. So Linda, thank you for that. Appreciate that. And real quick, what's on the Cobb burger? You said that's the most popular.
Yeah. Our Cobb burger is, Angus beef patty as Russian dressing, hard-boiled egg, beef bacon, pepper jack cheese, lettuce, tomato, and onion. It's essentially what a Cobb salad is, minus the avocado, on a burger. And the combinations just work really well.
All right, I predict you're going to sell about 500 of those in the next 2 days. Let me get back to the phones. We got to keep it tight, keep it moving. Garrett and Canisius next. Go ahead, Garrett.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I consider myself an adventurous eater. I'm always looking for new, interesting places. I'm 32 years old. I figured our generation was really starting to bring back some of those interesting things like sweetbreads you mentioned before. Where can I find the most interesting food in Rochester? Two of my favorites are Ember in Livonia and FLX in Geneva. So I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Yeah, Garrett, thanks very much. Mark, what do you think here?
Yeah, those are both good restaurants that he just mentioned out in the outer lying areas. You know, the places that I think in Rochester, I guess, that are at the top of the heap would be, I think Good Luck does a fantastic job. And they push the envelope a little bit there, you know. Where else?
I'm going to say Art at Lento will challenge you. I'm going to say Mark Cupolo at Rocco will challenge you.
In a little bit, yeah, on certain things, yeah.
Andrew, you remember your days in Rochester? Anything stand out to you?
Yeah, actually, Drifters over there on Main Street now, under Hilton. I know they definitely will push you out for good food, good atmosphere. For me as well, food trucks right now are a big scene for where a lot of good food comes from that I have in a brick and mortar.
And I'm going to say, if you want an interesting sub or a burger, that's why Zach is here. So you'll
that's
find...
why I am here.
So there you go.
There's, I wanted to throw a restaurant out there. It's Stop One Bodega. It's in the city. I believe it's on, I want to say, I don't want to misquote it, but I want to say it's on...
Lyle Ave?
No, it's on the east side near like Portland or something like that. But I can't think of it right now. I'm sorry, Charmaine. Charmaine Walker is the chef there. And she kind of does a steam table, which switches up every day. So you're getting essentially a different restaurant every day. And she has really good flavors, really good food. So if you're ever in the city, Stop One Bodega is a very, very good option for food. Food is phenomenal.
Garrett, thanks for the call. That's an interesting question. I'm continuing to challenge ourselves the way Anthony Bourdain would have done. Andy in Rochester next has some comments as a vegan about Anthony Bourdain. Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, thanks for the show. Great show. I did want to mention, you started the show out talking about Bourdain, and this is what I think. I had zero respect for the guy. People are chefs. They like him for that reason. I thought him was a bully and selfish. And you can watch a video, a YouTube video of him being asked about his thoughts about eating dogs because he liked dogs. He had a dog. And in the video, he's telling the woman to F off, and he calls her some names. So he's a bully. Saying that, the reason he's mad at vegans is because they bring up the torture and the killing process. And every time, he didn't want to hear about that. So I find him kind of selfish. So I guess I'd like to ask your guest. And we know nowadays that... meat, processed meat, the carcinogen, and dairy is associated with prostate cancer and breast cancer. I don't think it is an honest food, meat and dairy in your food. So how do you feel about the animals that you make your living off of that are killed for you?
All right, Garrett, we got to keep it tight. I'm going to start with Mark Cupolo. Go ahead, Mark, from Rocco.
I've always been a big meat eater. I grew up eating a lot of meat. I love it. I love animals. I could never shoot an animal. I could never... harm an animal, but I have no problem cutting them up and eating them. It's, you know, it's been a part of the cuisine I've been associated with ever since I've been doing this as a living. And
do you think Bourdain was a bully?
I think Bourdain was, I think he was, for me, it's more about his craft as a writer and a comedian.
And I think we'll also look back at the way we treated some of the animals we ate and feel some shame. We can do a better job of more humanely treating animals.
Absolutely.
Whether we eat them or not, we can do better. And I at least think that that is a good thing that we're talking about that. Zach, do you feel any compunction about eating animals?
No, because if we eat all the plants, we're eating all the animal food, so...
I don't know if that's a good scientific answer, but okay.
That's what I'm
It's a dodge, man. That is a dodge. That is a dodge.
But no, in all seriousness, I think there's a duality when it comes to veganism and eating meat and things. Like, even when you're talking about, you know, raising something like soy or, you know, different products that vegans or vegetarians tend to enjoy, those processes aren't all the way 100% humane to animals as well, because you have a lot of different critters that like to feed on the fields and things like that. So you might have I forgot what the company's called,
Monsanto.
Yeah, they'll, you know, poison the fields to keep certain animals from eating it. It's not 100% ironclad, so there's work to be done on both. I think you can be a little bit more responsible when it comes to you know, raising livestock and things of that nature. And you can be way more responsible when it comes to, you know, just crops. So I think there's a duality.
Down to our last minute, we heard about the Cobb burger. Andrew, what are you going to make tonight that you're most excited about? What do you like making the most in a kitchen? 20 seconds.
Steak au poivre, actually, my favorite dish. Probably do that tonight for guests.
Steak au poivre. Which
love that.
I don't think our last caller is ordering that one. Mark Cupolo from Rocco. What are you still most excited to make or put on your menu? When somebody at Rocco orders X, you get most excited or respect them most as a customer?
Boy, that's hard to say. You know, I get a thrill out of seeing everybody order everything.
That is such a dodge, too. You got to pick one. 10 seconds, Cupolo.
Well, it's not the butterscotch budino, let me
tell
you.
No, no. We all love that.
This time of year is the best time of year to cook for me, and it's almost hard to keep up with all the beautiful produce coming in. And
oh, what's on the menu now that you're excited about?
Well, we're starting to I got some peas now today, beautiful peas, so we're going to do risotto with peas tonight.
Risotto with peas.
Mm-hmm.
We love it. And Mark is leaving us with an idea. Don't expect your pasta dish to be the size of a soccer ball, and maybe we can change the pasta culture in Rochester.
Try it. Try having a little dish of pasta in between your appetizer and your main course, and you'll be authentic Italian.
And it won't sink you so much. It's the summer of Food on Connections. We wish we had another hour. Mark Cupola, you'll find him at Rocco. Great having you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Zach, Chef Zach, you will find him at Zach's Gourmet.
Yes, sir.
On Charlie Avenue. We will see you there. Thank you, Zach.
Thank you.
Andrew Bush, we're going to see you at Bobby V's in Stamford, Connecticut, or maybe sometime back in Rochester. Thanks for the time.
Awesome.
All right, thanks to Rob and Megan. I'm Evan. Have a great afternoon.